Good afternoon, ladies. So nice to see the familiar faces that remind me of Yerushalayim, because that was where I connected with my students. So beautiful to be here. Okay, our topic for today is anger and patience. And it's a big one. So let's delve right into it. The Maseilas Yesharim, in the chapter on Midas Hanikios, the Maseilas Yesharim talks about five levels of anger. And whenever you see five levels of anything, or a few levels of anything in the Maseilas Yesharim, there's usually some kind of hierarchy. So the Maseilas Yesharim, in this case, is starting with the worst manifestation of anger and getting slowly down to the best. So let's look at what the Maseilas Yesharim has to say. One of the things that I very much enjoy doing is finding a parallel between our classic sources, whether it's Tanakh and Chazal, or whether it's Musar Sfarim, and to find how modern psychology says things that hundreds of years ago our earlier sources said. So I once took a workshop on anger, and the presenter was saying that he often tries to teach people to look at three dimensions of anger. FIDS is the acronym: frequency, intensity, and duration. How frequently do you get angry? How intense is it? And what's the duration? Like, how long does it take you to calm down? So as we look at the Maseilas Yesharim's five levels, we're going to be looking at it from the perspective of frequency, intensity, and duration. Okay, so the first thing that the Ramchal talks about is what I call the angry man. The person who, no matter where you interact with him, you're walking on eggshells. You know that you have to be very, very careful around him. So this is a lesson of the Ramchal in Midas Hanikios. V'hu anich'as al kol davar she'asu neged ritzono. Person who gets angered by everything that doesn't go his way. U'mitzmalech chema, and he's full of fury. His heart is not with him, and his logic is gone. And this kind of person, the Ramchal says, is called a ragzan. A ragzan means we give him a title, like he is the angry man. And then the Ramchal says something very, very interesting. He says that this kind of person is the kind of person that is like an angry animal. V'hu sar ta'am mamash k'mo kol ha'chayot ha'torfot. He is lacking intellect like animals, like a wild animal. Now, it's said about the Maseilas Yesharim that every word is meaningful. In fact, the Ramchal says about this work that when you read it, it seems like it's very obvious. But then when you look deeper, there are things that a person can really glean deeper understanding. When I first read this concept, and I'm thinking about this person, he fulfills all three criteria. Frequency, for sure. He gets angry at everything that doesn't go his way. Intensity, sar, tam, mamash, atzaton ivara. The Ramchal says that he's ro'oi to be machri of the whole world with his anger. This is really intense. Duration, the Ramchal doesn't make reference to duration, but the assumption is that such a person has a very hard time. He's so dysregulated that it's not like he's going to just turn around in 1 second and be happy. So there's a certain piece there that I want to share with you. He says, "V'hu sar tam." This person is lacking logic like a wild animal. When I first read the Ramchal, I figured he's giving us Musar, that you know what you look like when you get angry? Your face is all red, your teeth are really white, the smoke coming out of your nose. You look like kmo kol ha'chayot ha'torfot. Then I read Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence. And he talks about the physiology of anger. And I said to myself, I now understand what it means when we say that the Ramchal is machaven to very deep things with very obvious ideas. Daniel Goleman explains to us that the physiology of anger is the physiology of the fight or flight response. When a person thinks, chas v'shalom, that they see an attacker coming with a gun or something like that, people have this adrenaline rush, which we call the fight or flight response. And the physiology is that strength comes to your extremities, to your hands and legs, to your hands if you're going to fight, to your legs if you're going to run, flight. And where does the blood rush from? It rushes from the brain to the extremities, and therefore this person has what's called failed cognitive functioning, meaning he takes on the physiology of an animal, because animals are strong, but they're not exactly very, very intelligent. And I then realized that this is what the Ramchal is relating to. V'husar tam, he loses his intellect. K'mo kol ha'chayot ha'tarfot, he has strength in his arms and legs, but not in his brain. And the Ramchal is actually explaining the physiology of anger. Now we have a question on this, which is, why would anger involve the fight or flight response? Danger, it makes sense. You think you're about to be attacked, you need to be able to run, you need to be able to fight. Why anger? And here I think is going to come our first insight into understanding anger. Daniel Goleman explains that the brain processes a threat to the ego the same way it processes a threat to the body. And that explains the husar tam mamash kmo kol ha'chayot ha'tarfot, meaning danger, 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 I'm being attacked. And you're not being attacked physically, but your ego is being attacked. And when you understand this concept, you understand a lot of things. Why do sometimes little children, you know, one boy will say to the other, you know, your sneakers are weird, and then he gets boom. What was that? My kids make fun of me that I live in Yerushalayim. And when I used to take my kids to Geula sometimes when they were younger, I would find parking in the back streets of the Geula Meir Sharm area, and it always was inevitably next to some little cheder where there were children who were, it was recess, for some reason it was always recess, and there was some little kid who was getting like beaten up. I cannot stand to see this. I say I have my own, like, you know, I don't know, I was never bullied, I never was a bully, but I can't stand it. So my kids would like bury their head in embarrassment. I would start screaming in Yiddish. I have no Yiddish. I'd say the three words I remember my grandparents saying. And the kids would like stare at me. And then the little guy got away. And I'm like, okay, guys, now we can go to Geula. One time I was telling this over to my parents. And I was saying the words that I use. My parents were like, Nadina, you're using such Litvish Yiddish. These are like Hasidish children. I said, maybe they're staring at me because they don't understand a word I'm saying. My kids were so mad. Oh, here goes mommy. Oh, no. But it always worked, so it was great. Why do kids fight that way? Because if it's a threat to the ego, is processed by the psyche as a threat to the body, and it brings out the same fight or flight response. What's that? So I want to tell you what the girls' perspective is. A lot of girls don't do the hitting. But the failed cognitive functioning is the flip side of the fight or flight response. Meaning I may not, by the way, some people will not hit, but they'll slam a door. They'll put something down very strongly. There's like that extra energy in the hands and legs. But the failed cognitive functioning is very common when women get angry. And what it really means is that there's some kind of filter that goes down and words that come out that are not really so typical of the way I like to talk. And that I think is very, 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 very common. When we say later, oi, why did I say that? That is some of this mahalach of what happens when a person gets angry. And I'm not a big expert in the description of the neuroscience. Daniel Goleman goes very into the amygdala and what it means when there's like a cognitive hijack and a person kind of like, literally the expressions that we use, like flip their lid, it's literally an expression of what happens physiologically. There's a very funny one in Hebrew for flip the lid. I love this. Aflo haschach. The schach flew off. The sukkah. So for people who understand more than the neurological implications of these expressions, they actually mean something. But what I mean practically is that the brain contains a lot of information that is filtered. And when a person has this, you know, emotional hijack, they suddenly, their filter goes down and things come out that they often later regret. And that, I think, is the more female manifestation of anger. I'll give three examples that I always bring. A woman in one of my classes was saying that she has a few children and she has one child who has certain developmental delays. And, you know, she's always running off to therapists trying to help this child. She tells her other children, please never make fun of him. Don't make fun of the way he eats or the way he ties his shoes, because he struggles more than all of us and we want it to feel very normal. And don't point out, you know, the things that are different. So she says, that's the whole mentality of the home. They're very empowering. He gets a lot of complimenting. He feels very well educated and normal. She said one time she was really upset at him. And it was a moment of that failed cognitive functioning. And she said, why can't you just be normal like your brothers? And she says, my whole mentality in my home, but in my brain, I'm storing the fact that he's not like his brothers. And then when the filter goes down, the words come out. I think another manifestation is many of us, because of our hashkafa, because of our refinement that we've worked on ourselves and our character, there are words that are used in the wider culture. You're familiar with those words. You've heard them. You've seen them on train stations and bus stops. You don't use them. But sometimes at moments of failed cognitive functioning, the filter goes down and the word comes out. And there are people who have not used a certain expression in years. And they really will tell you that they don't identify with that. They don't. They find it repulsive. But when filters go down, sometimes things come out. And the third manifestation of this is the fact that in our brains, we often store things that were said to us that we didn't like. And we always say, I will not use that expression on somebody else. And you might have like some kind of expression that your mother used or something that you didn't like. And when you have full cognitive control, you're like, I don't say that. And then sometimes at moments when we're extremely angry, we find ourselves using exactly the expression that we always said we would never use. And as a dear student of mine once said, she has this pillow that says, mirror, mirror on the wall, I am my mother after all. And that's that. Filter goes down, expression comes out, and here I am saying the things that I always said I wouldn't say. So what I'm trying to show you is that in the words that the Ramchal says, "V'hu sar tam mamash kmo kol chayot ha'tarfot," he's implying a whole cognitive hijack and what it looks like for us. And I think it also helps us understand that when people react intensely, there's a certain attack, and they feel attacked. And they don't really make a distinction between whether it's a physical attack and emotional attack. But this is the way people respond. Okay, that's only category number one. So this person is frequently angered. It's very intense. And we can assume that the duration is also they don't get back to themselves so quickly. Number two, a little bit better, because we're getting like better. V'hu shelo kol davar. Asher yaveuhu shelo kirtzono, im katon v'im gadol yivar apo. Which means, this person doesn't have the F of frequency. He does not get upset at everything that doesn't go his way. But, ach behigyo lahargiz, when he does get angry, yirgaz v'yichas kas gadol. He gets very angry. He has that same achlo hasrach of the other person. But it's just not happening all the time. והוא שקרו חכמים, קשה לחוס וקשה לרצות. Mishnah, Perkei Avos, Perkei, which talks about different types of anger. This person is, it's hard to anger him, but it's also hard for him to calm down. So we know we have the intensity, and here the Ramchal is making a reference to the duration, that you can't calm him down so easily. I'd like to say that this kind of personality, excuse the gender stereotypes here, category one, I think, is more common by men, although there are women who are the angry woman. Category number two, I think, is more common by women, which means we have different personas. Some people who know us in certain contexts think we're the calmest, sweetest, nicest people. And people who trigger us, or when there are situations that are like hot topics for us, we have a completely different presentation. And here I'm reminded of a book that Rabbi Zelig Pliskin wrote called Anger, the Inner Teacher. It's a small book, but basically for a person who's not angered by everything, but is occasionally angered and really loses it when he gets angry, he has to be aware of what those triggers are, because that's where he's going to present in a way that is really not him. And I'd like to say that for many of us, anger is what we call ego dystonic, which means it's outside of my, I don't know what that was. I lost it. That wasn't me. Because we really don't identify with our anger. And by the way, the fact that we don't identify with our anger is a good thing, as long as we're not denying it. The Maharal says so beautifully about the mitzvah that we do on Rosh Hashanah of Tashlich. It's actually a minhag, not mitzvah. He says, Tashlich is when you show what's the real you and what's the part that's outside of you. The fact that you can throw your sins into the water is a sign that the real me is a person who wants to do the right thing. And I throw those sins away. It's such a beautiful understanding of Tashlich. So when a person feels that his anger is the ego, dystonic, that wasn't me, I don't know what came over me, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But a person has to own the fact that he loses it. And I once was analyzing, what does the expression mean, losing it? What are you losing exactly? So I think that very often when we get angered in these extreme kind of ways, there was a trigger that was a legitimate trigger. And I have a valid complaint. But because I lost it, I lost the credibility of my presenting issue. If I'm upset at one of my children for coming home late, I have a valid thing. But if I start yelling and screaming, I lost it. Meaning the child is no longer looking at owning the fact that they came late. They're looking at the fact that they have a mother who needs some kind of help. They don't know what she needs, but she needs something. So I just lost it, because the child is not now owning the problem. He's looking at the fact that I'm out of control. And sometimes we lose it, which is a shame, because we really do have some legitimate points, but the person looking at us is not owning his chelek. They're just looking at the fact that you're out of control. So I once developed something in my mind where I made this equation. Anger equals trigger plus baggage. Trigger is, something went wrong, something upset me. Anger is always an overreaction to something. So I was triggered by something, but the baggage could be the fact, baggage could be physiological baggage. If a child were to spill apple juice on the floor on a Wednesday, I would just say, oh, come sweetie, let's get the mop. And if it's Friday, 2 minutes before Shabbos, the baggage is that I'm exhausted, that I was up all night cooking, that I had 20 guests walking through the door soon, that I wanted to light candles, and now there's a sticky mess. For the child, the apple juice spilling was the same on a Wednesday and a Friday. He didn't mean to spill it right before Shabbos. But I am overreacting because of my baggage. And I think there's a lot of Friday afternoon baggage, by the way. In fact, it's a very sad thing. I have a friend who runs a school. I don't think it exists anymore, but there used to be a school in Yerushalayim for teenage girls who were really, really in trouble off the derech and in trouble with all kinds of like addictive substances. She once made a Purim party for these girls, and she told them to get dressed up together like a theme to make something cute for the Purim party. They walked into the party, and they were all dressed in black with pointy hats and brooms, and they were calling themselves Erev Shabbos witches. And she said, I was supposed to laugh, but I was really crying. And a lot of your baggage about religious life was like kind of like bottled up into this little thing. And they were like talking in these shrilly voices and saying, get out of the kitchen! You know, what do you mean you're hungry? Wait till after Kiddush. I faint on Friday night. You can also faint on Friday night. No food. That makes crumbs. Eat a banana. And it was so sad because for every Erev Shabbos witch in one child's mind, another child might view their mother as the Erev Shabbos queen who made five different types of desserts and the delicious aroma of the challahs, and they're both true. So the idea of owning our anger and not reacting with baggage even is important for our children's religious identity, for their association with mitzvos. It may be worth it to get more sleep and buy more kugels and not have the baggage affect the way the child perceives Shabbos. Like I said, it's not fair because in the same family, another sibling might never think that way. But there are clearly enough people who view this as being a problem. So trigger plus baggage equals anger. And I started thinking, if there is like an emotional hijack, and the cognition is being, there's like failed cognitive functioning, then what we are trying to do is to kind of put the cognition back in place. And again, I don't have all the neurological terminology that probably some of you do have better than me. People have tried to explain to me, but sometimes I don't ever get it right. But when you ask yourself the question, trigger plus baggage, you're already reinstating a certain cognitive piece. So I find it very interesting to analyze the trigger plus the baggage. Sometimes somebody said something a little critical, and you get very angry. The trigger was the comment. Was it a nice comment? The baggage is that that's exactly what some relative used to say to you all the time when you were younger. And it brings up old stuff. I was once thinking a very common thing with some of my students who have like kind of developed themselves and their religious identity over time. So if you're a mother and you go shopping with a child, and 8-9-year-old girl, she picks up this like hot pink miniskirt and says, "Ooh, this is so cute, can we buy it?" And you say, "No." And you put it down and you run out of the store. No. The trigger was that she's asking to buy something you don't think appropriate. The baggage is, I'm not raising my kid to want to wear that kind of thing. That's the way I used to dress when I was younger. No kid of mine is going to dress that way. And soon she's going to look like the neighbor down the block and what's going to be with her. That's your baggage. The child said something and you're reacting to it very, very strongly. So we can ask ourselves sometimes, what's the trigger and what's the baggage? Because anger is an overreaction to what's often a legitimate trigger. It just got a reaction that's way too strong. If we are already talking about cognitive things that can kind of reinstate the cognitive piece, another thing to think about, we spoke yesterday about the different personality types, and I mentioned that Eish in the thought of Rav Chaim Vital represents fire. And we said that Eish personalities are burn things. The question is, are they burning problems or are they burning people with their criticism? So when you find yourself getting angry, you could say, what am I burning And what do I really want to burn? If I am yelling at my children on an Erev Shabbos, I'm burning the children with my criticism, but I really want to burn out the Erev Shabbos chaos. If I get angry at somebody for not spending enough quality time with me, and I say something very biting and angry, I'm burning them, but really I want to burn out the distance in the relationship. And that is not accomplished through anger. Maybe a coffee date every Sunday morning, but not anger. And that's the other chiddush about anger. Anger is an overreaction, but it's often trying to accomplish something and going about it the wrong way. Most people don't want to spend quality time with you when you're angry at them. So we ask ourselves, what am I burning and what do I want to burn? And it helps you kind of figure out to redirect, because burning out the Erev Shabbos chaos might mean setting the table the day before, plotting my menu better, putting on some music. It's not going to be through yelling. So it just kind of helps you figure out, where am I going wrong and what's a better way to accomplish the thing that I'm trying to accomplish. Okay. So I think that the second category of people who have their hot topics, Rav Zelig Pliskin says that if you're usually a calm person and you find yourself acting like the angry man, not often, but occasionally, ask yourself, what are my hot topics? There are certain universal ones, like money and religion, that often bring out very intense responses to people and people. And then there are very specific ones, justice, space, privacy, honesty, all kinds of things that when those things are triggered, I have a very, very strong response. And it would be good for a person to ask themselves, anger the inner teacher. What is this teaching me about my value system? What is it teaching me about my priorities? What is it teaching me about how to set up for technical success if this is a hot topic for me? I tell students sometimes, you know, the whole seminary, year in seminary, you know, seminaries, extroverts have an advantage in seminary situations. Introverts really struggle. It's being around people 24/7. You don't come home from school and shut your door. And sometimes for people who really need space and privacy, they get very overwhelmed. So I say you need to find your little quiet spot, your little tree, your place to go, because what you're learning about yourself is that you have a real need for space. And you never realized that about yourself, but now you do. And now you have to know that you're going to get overwhelmed if you're around people too much. And at some later stage of life, if you're going to go spend Yontif with your husband's family and there's going to be a lot of people around, you're going to need a little quality walk with him in the morning because you need your space and your privacy. So anger is an inner teacher. I have some children who Rav Zelig Pliskin would call them injustice collectors. The ones who remember everything you promised and you didn't deliver. They're also the ones who are very bothered by teachers who are, you know, singling out certain people and have their favorites. They literally collect injustices. Kids like this will get very angered and they have to learn how to understand what's bothering them and find a healthier way, a better way to process it. So anger really is an inner teacher. And you find yourself acting in a way that's out of character. You see, what does this teach me about myself, my sensitive points, my values, and how am I going to better handle it? I will say that as the Maaseh Yisharim moves down the ranks, it gets better and better. But the one thing that's harder about category number two than one is that the angry man is perceived the same way everywhere he is. The number two, which is more female, is sometimes difficult for a person who is the recipient of the anger because other people don't view let's say it's a mother. So she's lovely. She runs a chesed organization. Everybody loves her. She's a doll. But this child who triggers that parent in that way sees a very different side. And nobody realizes it other than them. And it makes it harder for them to cope because it's not the person that acts the same way. And sometimes it's really difficult. You feel very alone when you're the victim of someone's anger and everybody else views this person as being a big tzaddik. We're not saying that they're not a tzaddik. It's just that, you know, you are the person who experiences them differently, and it's not so easy to be that person. Category number three. We're getting better. Yesh ka'asan pachot mizeh. Shelo yichas anikla. Doesn't get angry at little things. Va'afilu k'shiyagia lakas, ye kaso kas katan. When this person gets angry, they're not very angry. They don't lose it. Lo yasor midarkei ha-sechel. They don't flip their lid. Ach odenu yeshmor evrato. But this person holds on to his anger. So category number one was all three, frequency, intensity, duration. Category number two, we drop the F. There's no frequency. It doesn't happen all the time, specific topics. But there's intensity and duration. Category number three, there's no frequency, there's no intensity, but there is duration. Adayin yishmor evrato. And here, we're getting more and more female. People who don't lose it, they're not yellers. But when they get upset, they kind of give you the cold shoulder. And it lasts for a while. And I wondered about this piece in the Ramchal, whether adayin yishmor evrato is a conscious choice that it's going to take me a while till you can get a smile out of me, or is it just a physiological reality and there's no conscious choice here? Sometimes people who don't lose it and don't yell are trying to find ways to communicate, please don't do that again. And the way it will manifest, and we'll get the cold shoulder for them for a while. They kind of replace the intensity of their anger with a more like a passive aggression. And it's very female. And maybe it's a conscious choice for some to kind of communicate, don't mess with me. Or I don't appreciate what just happened. And I find that sometimes the little boys in school, boom, 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 and then it's all over. You know, little fighting, a little yelling, and then they're best friends 5 minutes later. And sometimes with girls, it's that silent treatment, and there's another day she didn't talk to me, and she moved her. I remember when I was in seventh grade, I had a best friend who was very much, you know, very, very nice girl, didn't get angry frequently, but when she was angry, she would move her chair a little bit at an angle, a tiny bit away from me like this. And that would last a few days. And it was a message. This is my way of getting angry. So this leads to a separate midah, which is internalized anger. Some people just hold their anger inside. It's not our topic for today, but it's a very interesting topic. The Bali Musa refer to it as hakpada, when you're makbid on somebody, you have tainas. And you're not showing it in a conscious way. But there's a little bit of a silent treatment. I like to say about this one, it's better on the cost level for sure. No yelling, no screaming, no dysregulation, no drama. The problem with it is that Cold War really is not appreciated by the Torah. And I'll share with you that we have an Isser and Vayikra Yutes. The Torah says, Latisna esachicha bilvavecha. You're not allowed to hate your brother in your heart. I always say that sometimes our English translation of words is a disservice to us. Because hate is a four-letter word, literally and figuratively. I don't hate people. I may be upset, I may resent them, I don't hate anybody. Hate is a very politically incorrect word. We don't hate. And then you see that the Mishnah, Masechta Sanhedrin, defines sinah in a very unique way. It's really not the hate that we, the English translation that we think of. The Mishnah says, what is latisna? What does it mean to not hate somebody? How can the Torah be mitzvah on an emotion without quantifying what that emotion is? So the Mishnah Sanhedrin gives you a definition. And the Mishnah says, kol shelo diber imo shalosh yamim mitoch eva nekrasone. If you avoid somebody for 3 days out of animosity, That's called sinah. What do we learn from this? That the Torah views cold war as being very dangerous. I didn't yell, I didn't scream, I just avoided you. So according to the Torah, that little tipping of the chair in the other direction has to end after 3 days, by 3 days. In fact, three intervals where you would have regularly interacted with a person and you consciously avoid them, the first three are not yet considered sinah. And if they all happen within 3 days, like one time, 3 days, you tried to call me, I avoided your call three times, that's not sinah. It's after 3 days that it becomes a pattern. And the pattern could be that every Erev Shabbos I call you and for 3 weeks I don't. Or I usually go to the gym and meet you there, but for three times I don't. And the Torah is telling you that dibor is chibor. When you speak to people, you connect. And even if somebody's upsetting to you, when you kind of talk, when you talk it out with them, you really could heal. And the same pasuk that says, Lotisna tochicha b'vavecha, says, Hochach tochicha tzemitecha. You should surely rebuke your fellow man. Tochacha means constructive conversation, and sometimes we don't want to have, we're very, very conflict avoidant, and we're bearing a lot of negativity. And if we just were to talk out the thing that was bothering us, we would really feel better. So the Torah is not appreciating this avoidance thing. And I think a lot of us know that sometimes it starts with 3 days and it ends with 20 years. Because mitoch eva means the reason why I'm avoiding you is not because I'm embarrassed and not because I have to regroup and I'll love you better if I have a little space. That's fine. That's not lotisna. Lotisna is when the 3 days leads me to want to take another 3 days. And in the avoidance, this idea kind of like blows up to be bigger than life. Because a lot of times when we avoid people, we turn the offense into something much bigger. Yeah. And if you were to have to talk to somebody, I remember that the very first topic I did when I started a Musarvad was Hakpada. And back then I was giving some homework. Now I don't really give homework so much. And the homework was to find an excuse to call somebody who you have resentment towards. And that didn't mean that you were ready for a conversation. It meant that you were asking them for a recipe or something that just humanizes them a little bit. Because the avoidance is very dangerous according to the Torah. So this category number three is better on the cost level. The person's not yelling and screaming. But it has its other problem, adayin yishmor evrato, that the person has to own it and try to regroup and try to come back. And by the way, I want to stick in something here about boundaries. Sometimes there are relationships that are very, very triggering. And a little separation will actually allow me to love the person better. So not all avoidance is mitoch eva, halacha says. Sometimes, a little too close for comfort, we need a little space, and I'll actually love you more if I wasn't always around you. So the specific definition of the halacha is shalosh yamim mitoch eva. The reason why I'm avoiding you is because I can't stand you. And after 3 days, I can't stand you even more. If we need a little space and we regroup, then we're not being over on lotisna. And some relationships do require a little distance, a little space, a little regrouping. Okay. Now we're getting to number four. And number four is really, like, I think is our hero in self-regulation. Kashe lechos. This person doesn't get angry easily. The ka'aso lo lahashchit, and his anger is not destructive. But lo lachaleh doesn't destroy anything. Elakas mu'at, it's very little. So the frequency is not there, the intensity is not there. And what about the duration? The chama za'amo, how long is his anger? Rega velo yoter, a little bit of time. A minute and not more. Dehenu m'sha'a sha'kas mitarevo b'teva. From the time when he is angered, ad shegam hatvuna titorer kinegdo. until the intellect sets in, and that's the little gap. V'hu ma she'amru chachamim, kasheh lechos v'noach l'ratzot. The ideal. Person who's hard to anger and easy to appease. In this category, we have a very important answer to an important question that's often asked in Musar, which is, can a person completely change a bad midah? Can I get rid of my anger? And we all know that the Chafetz Chaim said that it could take 70 years to change a midah. The Baal Shem Tov, I think, said that it's easier, maybe Rav Sura Salanter said it's easier to finish off than to change one midah. So we're not necessarily going to just snap our fingers and get rid of anger. So then what is the goal? And I think here the Ramchal is giving us a goal. The Ramchal is teaching you that you are a very high-level person. In fact, I just want to give you context. Number five in this list of five, number five is Hillel HaZaken, who was never angered. So that's kind of like out of most of our ranges. So category number four is really like the epitome for most of us. And the Ramchal is not saying that this person has no triggers. They are triggered. It says here, Mehasha'asha kas mitorabo bateva. He was bothered by something. There was something that made him angry. And here we learn a very important principle that's probably one of the most important Musar principles I ever learned from Rabbi Dr. Twersky, who says that your primary responses are not in your control. There is no bechira. Some people will be angered by something. Some people won't. But you're not thinking, I think I want to be angry right now. Let's be angry. Emotions, whether it's jealousy, sadness, worry, anxiety, anger, frustration, they come. And we don't have bechira. Things that just come, it's the way Hashem made us. Where does your bechira start? With your secondary response. Now that I'm feeling this way already, what do I want to do about it? That's the bechira. And I remember hearing Rabbi Dr. Twersky speak about this. He said, you know, I was speaking to a group of women. He said, you know, a lot of good Jewish women, you know what their secondary response is? To be upset at themselves about their primary response. What's wrong with you? Why are you such a baby? Why are you getting angry? Why are you jealous? Why grow up? He says, no, it's not true. He says, hu yotzram, hu yodea yitzram. Everybody has their weaknesses, and some people are triggered for different things. We don't judge ourselves on our primary response. It is what it is. And now that I feel this way, what am I going to do about it? That's where the bechira starts. So we see that this person, this highest level other than Hillel, is not somebody who's not angry. Maybe Hillel didn't even have a primary response. This person was angered. But he has a very well-oiled machine for regulation. And that's what we learn from this source. Ad shegam hatzvuna titzorer kenegdo. He was angered by something. He was triggered by something. He's not blaming himself. He's not judging himself. But because he works on himself as a person, he knows how to access a cognitive reframe. The tzvuna titzorer kenegdo. It's the cognition comes in and sees it in a different light. I always feel that space, that rega, that the Ramchal is talking about, is a very important thing that takes place in that moment. And that is validation. Some people cannot accept a negative emotion, so they suppress it, or they repress it, or they deny it, and then they have all kinds of physical ailments that come from all this pushing emotions down. According to the Ramchal, the person is triggered. He understands what bothered him. And now he accesses Bechira. What do I want to do about it? So there's a healthy facing of the issue. I don't have to be a perfect person. But I would like to not carry on with this anger. And the word Tzvuna It's a very good word for what our second response is. It's often some kind of cognitive reframing. Seeing the situation from a different angle, accessing some pasuk, some mantra. One of my students said to me that her mantra for secondary response is a pasuk in Habakkuk Gimel that says, Berogez rachim tizkar, which means when you're angered, remember your rachamim. And sometimes some people who anger us, there's something going on with them. Or there's some way that I could kind of access a little compassion. And for some of us, that's going to be the secondary response. Hurt people, hurt people. And what's wrong with this person that made them do this? Where are they struggling? Maybe they're lacking emotional intelligence. Maybe they're overwhelmed. Maybe they're something that allows you to have a little more rachman. And if it's not that, it could be a cognitive reframe in general. I once had a situation where I really learned something about cognitive reframing the hard way. I was asked to come speak at a convention. It was the first time I was coming to America. I had very little children at home, very overwhelmed young mother. And my husband and I were invited to speak at an Eshet Torah Project Inspired convention. My mother offered to take the children for Shabbos, and I had not gone on vacation for many, many years. So I was very excited at this opportunity to, like, you know, to go to be away with my husband a little bit. And I had a nursing baby who did not have a passport. And of course, I was not going to leave the baby behind. So I went to the embassy. It was just when the embassies were turning over to online applications and meetings. It used to be you come in the embassy, wait online, and, you know. So I was told that even though you have to have an appointment to come, if people have extenuating circumstances, they could come and sit and wait. And at the end of the day, they can get in. So I went with my baby, and I sat there all day, literally all day. And there was a woman sitting next to me with her baby, also waiting. Finally, at the end of the day, I get called in to, you know, for inside. And I said, you know, I'm supposed to speak at a conference. They said, we're sorry. That's not a good enough reason. You have to go do your online appointment. The appointments are backed up for the next few months. You will not have a passport in time for your conference. The person in the next room comes out, and I hear her being told, you'll have your passport in the mail by next week. Now, we both had been sitting for many, many hours, and I was upset. I said to her, I can't believe that they're not giving it to me. How come they're giving it to you and not to me? She unwrapped her baby's face for the first time the whole day. And her baby had a very extreme deformity. And she says to me, deformity. She says to me, even the American embassy understands that some people have to travel for corrective surgery. At that moment, this big black dot called on the conference, and I'm sitting here waiting for it. It shrunk into a tiny dot on a page with pink flowers all around it. And I felt embarrassed that I had made such a big deal. I walked out, and I didn't go to the conference that year. But I was sorry that I had to see this very sad situation in order to teach me to have perspective on my problem. And cognitive reframing is asking you to oil the machine in advance, to be able to deal with frustrations. Not all frustrations can be, you know, pre-planned. But the person in the Ramchal's fourth level is somebody who has a very small gap between the trigger and the reframe. Most of us eventually reframe and we calm down. But the person who practices this can access his reframe earlier. And here I'll get back to Daniel Goleman. He says the earlier a person accesses his reframe, the better it is. A study was done on people who were sitting in an office waiting for an interview. And the head of it, you know, the boss, whatever, comes out and says something very obnoxious to the people in the waiting room. In one group, A few minutes later, a secretary came out and apologized. She said, you know, he's going through a very hard time, whatever it was. In the second group, the same exact thing happened, but it happened around 40 minutes later. And they saw that where the mitigating information comes in has a lot to do with your ability to calm yourself down. The people in the first place were able to reframe and were able to understand. They took the pulse of the people. I guess waiting for 40 minutes for an appointment is enough to make you nervous. But they found that the mitigating information, when it comes too late, the anchor takes on a biological reality, and it's much harder to calm down. So we see that in the fourth level, the Ramchal, when he says it's a small amount of time, meaning the quicker you access your reframe, the easier time you have getting back to yourself. But there is a rega there. And the important things that happens in that rega is validation. This is upsetting for me. I understand why I'm upset. And now I'm making a conscious choice to reframe. Okay, we have to wind down. Number five is Hillel. We know from the Gemara and Shabbos Lamed Aleph that Hillel, somebody made a bet to anger Hillel and tried in many, many different ways and didn't succeed. So why does the Gemara tell us a story about somebody who was just a saint? Of Aaron Feldman in his book, The River, the Kettle, and the Bird, he says that the Gemara teaches you what normal people would find triggers. For example, the repeating offenses, and the story of the Gemara, the person kept on coming and calling Hillel out of the shower on Erev Shabbos to ask him an irrelevant question. And he kept on doing it. Most people, the first time they do something, you're okay, but repeated offenses. He said religious motivation. Hillel was getting ready for Shabbos, and this man kept on bothering him. That would get many people. Technical failure. He had to get out of the shower each time he was freezing. There are many aspects of the story with Hillel that would make most people angry. So when the Gemara tells you that Hillel was beyond it, it's for you to know what are the possible triggers that you have to be aware of, because if it happened to you, you maybe would lose it. And therefore, the Gemara is trying to help you understand what are the triggers, because in this bet, this man thought he was going to succeed. So there's obviously some planning going on there. I did not get a chance to do the part that I really wanted to do, so I'm just going to, in 1 minute, say that sevel, savlanot, is really the antidote to anger. And it's such a beautiful topic of its own. I'm sorry that the time went, but I just want to share it with you. Savlanot, patience, comes from the shorish of sevel. Sevel means pain. And a sabal is a porter, a person who carries your heavy furniture. When people hold a situation, that's what savlanot is. This is annoying. This person's annoying me. Sometimes this relationship is light as a feather and easy. But sometimes the child is going through a hard time, or the spouse, or the boss. And all of a sudden you feel like carrying a heavy piece of furniture and not a light feather. And the nature of people is to just throw off the burden. But the ability to build ourselves and to hold something, even though it's difficult, is the opposite of anger. I just want to say something very beautiful that the Altar of Kelm says about the Midah of Savlana. He says, Zeh Hashar LaHashem Tzadikim Yavovo. This is the gate that Tzadikim go through, when people who can tolerate difficult situations, this gets them closer. They get closer to Hashem. The question is, why dafka this Midah? And the Altar of Kelm explains that Hashem is always carrying us. We're difficult, we're annoying, we don't listen to him, we do the same thing again and again. He does so much for us that we're still messing up. And yet he doesn't crash it. He holds the world up. And therefore, every time you can sustain, it doesn't mean that you don't need some help, and maybe sometimes you need to put it down gently, readjust, pick it up again. But the crashing, The ability to hold something difficult is the midah of the Baruch Shalom. He's always holding the world up. He's always holding us up. Despite our difficult, you think about the 8 billion people in this world who he's sustaining daily in every way. How many of them are really doing his will? Very few. Hashem is the ultimate savlan. And therefore, when I can hold a situation that's difficult, and again, to get the support we need and get the help we need, but when I can hold it up, Zeh Hashar LaHashem Tzadikim Yavova. That resilience, that ability to hold, is making you more godlike. And this can give us koach to carry situations that are difficult for us. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you.